10 meters to the left, and a few meters further from Ghazkul. My head spun and my stomach felt like it had been turned inside out, but I had been delivered from the torrent of gunfire. I emptied the rest of my pistol rounds at the beast while he laboriously turned towards my new position. The bolts caught the orc around the head and face again, but inflicted little more damage than my first salvo. A lone scratch dribbled just beneath the beast's good eye. But at last, the glare that turned on me showed some emotion. Anger. Anger that I could use. Something clanked and rattled inside the armor-mounted cannon while I reloaded again. I did not shoot. It would have been a waste of ammunition. The beast's gun shrieked, spitting blasts of purple light at me. My displacer field activated again, throwing me a couple of meters directly forward with a wrench, still in the path of the orc's fusillade. A blast tore through my left arm, scorching through the ceramite outer armor. Another struck the side of my helm with a blinding burst of light. I lost my vision and was reduced to relying on the input of my armor, reducing my sight to a monochrome series of vague blotches. I holstered my bolt pistol as the warlord came at me and drew the plasma pistol from my belt. I waited for the whine of the generator to descend to the hum of a stable magnetic field and fired. The orc was only 3 meters away, and the plasma ball slashed into the creature's chest. It melted through the armor in an instant and punched into flesh beneath. A burst of cobalt fire that rippled out the neatly punctured breastplate. I've seen such shots kill traitor legionaries outright. The beast staggered back, swaying violently from side to side. The scene cleared as my eyes recovered. The orc was hunched over, looking like he was retching. I kept the pistol pointed at the warlord, waiting patiently for the ticking of the recharger to end and the power build-up to start again. The warlord heaved and shuddered, shoulders moving beneath the heavy armor. I have to admit that when I realized what was happening, my aim wandered for a millisecond. The beast really was laughing, harder than ever.
He waits at the door, knowing that what he is about to do treads a fine line between assertion and disobedience. The seconds and minutes pass slowly until he hears the approach of another. Asmodai steps through a door in the bulkhead, like Belial divested of his armor for the moment and dressed in the robes of the Deathwing, patterned with the sigils and symbols that denote their stations. Belial nods his head in welcome, comforted by the fact that the interrogator chaplain shares his view on the present matter. Unexpectedly, Asmodai speaks.
You are determined to pursue this with the Supreme Grand Master. Master Azrael and I have frequent disagreement, but your standing with our commander is exemplary.
I did not accept the position of Grand Master of the Deathwing to be popular, Brother Chaplain. I admit that the extremity of our cause might lead to consternation. But the outcome warrants the risk to reputation.
Very well.
Belial activates the door terminal, announcing their presence. A few seconds pass before the door hisses open, revealing the chamber of Supreme Grand Master Azrael. For generations, these rooms have hosted the commanders of the Dark Angels, and if the legend is to be believed, then before that, they were used by the Lion himself. The walls are hung with banners showing the heraldry of successive chapter masters, Azrael's taking pride of place above the chair and desk at the far end of the chamber. He looks up, stern, and beckons the two petitioners to approach. His brow furrows, his gaze lingering more on Asmodai than Belial.
You understand that our campaign on Piscina is ongoing.
The Supreme Grand Master focuses on Belial, who called for the audience, eyes as dark and hard as granite.
All three of us have duties elsewhere.
I will be brief, Grand Master. I think that we waste valuable time and resources trying to reclaim Pacina 4 from the Org infestation. With the rock in orbit, we possess the weaponry required to obliterate all life on the planet, and should do so before casualties amongst our ranks become excessive.
I am surprised that out of all my warriors, you are prepared to abandon Pacina 4 without a battle. You have already strived so hard to guard this world for the Chapter and the Emperor. Why give in to the Council of Despair now?
No despair, Brother Azrael. Only a long-delayed acceptance of the consequences of my failures many years ago. Had I succeeded in eliminating the Orc threat properly at its arrival, the current situation would not have developed. That I did not has allowed the Orcs to gain a grip on this world that no effort of the Chapter can prize away.
I see.
The Supreme Grandmaster stands up and starts to pace back and forth behind his chair, one hand stroking his chin, the other lightly gripping the thick rope belt at his waist. Belial takes this as an opportunity to argue his case further, and Azrael says nothing to stop him.
We cannot accomplish this task alone without ignoring other battles that require our intervention. The longer we spend on this lost world, the more danger to other planets of the Emperor. The Pisidians have been rendered useless as allies. Would you have us wait until forces from the Imperium arrive to assist us?
Asmodai shakes his head, thumping a fist into his other hand.
Impossible! All three of us know that the Fallen interfered with Pacina during the stewardship of Chaplain Boreas and his companions. We risk knowledge of their existence spreading beyond the world if outsiders become involved in the campaign.
Azrael stops and turns towards the chaplain, his hands moving to clasp each other behind his back. Talk of the Fallen, the Dark Angels that turned against the Lion and the Emperor during the heresy, earns an even fiercer scowl from the Supreme Grandmaster.
You suggest that I destroy the population of an entire world to keep secret the existence of the Fallen. An act that will earn us further investigation and suspicion, no doubt. Sometimes I think you desire a confrontation with the Imperium, Asmodai.
There is a precedent, Brother Azrael. And the presence of the Orcs presents far more justification than has sometimes been offered.
If there is evidence of the Fallen to be removed, it will be removed. If I listen to your counsel, every world where even rumor of the Fallen is found will be left a lifeless wasteland.
Asmodai has not mentioned previous petitions to call for Exterminatus, and this revelation annoys Belial. He wonders for a moment if his desire to vanquish the Orcs is being used by the chaplain. The Deathwing commander steps closer to his superior, feeling that the terms of the conversation have moved away from his initial purpose.
The Pacinia system is tainted. We can no longer recruit from here with any confidence. If we become mired in a war against the Greenskins, we compound the failure of my earlier campaign.
Azrael's eyebrows rise in surprise.
Your campaign? Your failure? Did you not hold back the Orcs sufficiently to stop the world being overrun? And did not the entire chapter under my command conduct the intended annihilation? You would embroil us in intrigue with the Imperium and throw away millions of lives because of your impossible quest for perfection.
Apologies, Supreme Grandmaster. Our failure. And it is not perfection I seek. It is simply an absence of error. Our warriors spend days in the reclusium, pondering their failings and atoning for their deficiencies. Those of us of higher rank must hold to an even stricter code.
The reasons are irrelevant. We cannot place ourselves in higher moral authority than the people we are sworn to protect. If there is atonement to be made, should it not be painful? Should it not involve sacrifice? Suggest the easy route, thinking there will be no repercussions, no regrets.
There is truth to Azrael's words that Belial cannot argue against, but equally he cannot hide his consternation at this refusal.
And I see from your expression that there is some other purpose for wishing swift conclusion to our war in Pacina.
Directly confronted, Belial must confess his ulterior motive, knowing that there is selfishness behind his dismay, but unable to deny the Supreme Grand Master.
There were reports of the beast. Sightings a few thousand light-years from our current position. It would be better use of our might to strike down the creature that dealt the fatal wound to Pacina, rather than to remain here and mire ourselves with the scraps left behind.
So, it is to be revenge, is it?
I would prefer you not cheapen my motives with such terminology, Supreme Grandmaster. It is justice to punish those guilty of the crimes, is it not? The beast ruined Pacina. We are simply putting the planet out of its misery.
Azrael looks to speak, but pauses, confounded by Belial's argument. He sits down, steepling his hands to his chin, as he rests his elbow on the report-strewn desk. He looks at Belial for some time, and then moves his gaze to Asmodai, eyes narrowing slightly.
It is a bleak day when the Adeptus Astartes must weigh the life and death of a whole world, an entire culture that has supported and praised them for generations. You are both dismissed.
Are you refusing my proposal, Supreme Grandmaster? Am I to conclude that my plan does not find favor in your eyes? You will not conduct exterminatus?
You have made sound arguments, brother. Not decide the fate of a world in a moment.
Ghazkul straightened and broke into a run, covering the ground with strides surprisingly swift for the bulk of his armor. It took only an instant to calculate that the plasma pistol would not be recharged before the beast was upon me. I was in no haste to meet the beast in single combat, not while there were other courses of action open. I holstered my plasma weapon as I turned and pulled out my bolt pistol as I broke into a run. I fired blind on the move, dispensing the shot every second. The compact cogitators fitted into each bolt guided them towards the warlord. I heard the crack of their impacts but had no idea where they struck. I headed for one of the abandoned warehouses, the front wall listing like a sinking ship, the roof pulverized by the earlier bombardment. My auto-senses switched to low visibility mode as I ducked beneath the cracked lintel of a secondary door into the darkness within. Slowing, I leapt over piles of collapsed masonry and navigated past fallen beams, ducking and turning as dictated by the mangled debris. I paused and checked behind frequently, knowing that the orc could be upon me in moments. Ghazkul was silhouetted against the main cargo doors, almost filling the gap. I activated the Vox.
Captain Belial requesting gunship strike. Aim for my homing signal. Level the whole building. Turn it into rubble.
I was younger then, still occasionally prone to such imprecise melodrama. I detached my homing device and dropped it to the floor. I moved away, heading towards the rear of the warehouse. Looking again, I saw that Ghazkul was shouldering his way through the tangled wreckage, plaster and masonry dust falling thick as he heaved aside a broken wall. A glow from the bionic eye glinted from shattered window panes and fallen skylights. The tread of the warlord's steps was muffled by the rubble underfoot. A soft crunch of settling gravel and crushed brick that I could use to determine his position, even as I circled my back to the enemy. I needed him to come further into the building to ensure there would be no escape. I stepped out in front of the beast and fired the last two shots in my pistol. The bolts exploded against the orc's engine pack, letting out a cloud of steam and spray of thick lubricant. His claw opened and shut several times as the beast saw me and turned. I backed away, holstering the pistol and drawing my plasma weapon. I checked the chrono display and was satisfied that there would not be enough time for the beast to get out of the warehouse before the gunship arrived. I fired the plasma pistol, aiming not for the orc, but for a metal girder above him,
holding back the collapsed remnants of an upper floor. The shot parted a support, causing it to buckle in moments. The tortured metal twisted and gave way. Several tons of plusboard and ferrocrete fell on the beast. Not enough to knock the creature from his feet, but distracting, giving me time to break to the right, heading for an external door I had seen as I entered. Once outside, I turned and headed back to the main harbor front, where I had first encountered the beast, granting me a clear view to the Thunderhawk's attack run. Missiles streamed from its wings, and heavy bolters let out a fusillade of fire. The nose-mounted las cannon sent stabs of white into the building, and the fuselage battle cannon opened fire. The missile hit a second before the shells, detonating only after penetrating the warehouse wall and throwing up a plume of shattered bricks and plasteel. The battle cannon shell ripped into the interior, fire and smoke belching from the hole as it exploded within. The Thunderhawk circled and continued to rain down vengeance with las cannon and shell. It turned broken brick to gravel, glass to glittering splinters, and metal stanchions into molten droplets. The power inlet erupted into a plume of burning gas, sending a cloud of masonry shards into the sky. Small pieces of ferrocrete fell on my armor like rain and on the roadway around me. After continued punishment, the warehouse collapsed, the last vestiges of its wall and roof reduced to several tons of rubble. The pilot affirmed that the target was destroyed.
Return to the battle, brother.
I was sure that even if Ghazkul had survived, the orc would be heavily injured and easy to finish off. A mistake. A moment of overconfidence I have regretted ever since. I could still hear the ping of the personal transponder deep beneath the smoking remnants, its coordinates appearing in my visual display. Something shifted in the rubble. It might have been simply debris settling, but I was going to leave nothing to chance. I approached the ruin, plasma pistol at the ready.
He lies in the gloom, the shadows held back by the fitful light of a pale lamp in the bulkhead above his cot. Azrael has not yet replied to his proposal, and 4 days have passed. 4 days, and 4 more missions in Cadillus Harbor and across the East Barrens. 4 missions, hundreds of dead orcs, and yet how many more await their death? 4 missions. Another dead brother of the First Company, another suit of tactical dreadnought armor consigned to the Tech Marines for repairs that might take months if they can be completed at all. And nothing to say of the battle brothers killed and wounded in the other companies. Belial and the Dark Angels could spend a year, 5 years, and still the purging of Cadillus would not be complete, and the world of Piscina IV would not be freed from the threat of the orcs. His thoughts are interrupted by the chime of the door terminal and a voice on the local comm.
It is Brother Ezekiel.
Belial sits up and barks at the vocal pickup mounted on the wall.
More light. Door open.
The lights brighten, and the door winds aside, revealing the chief librarian arrayed in his battle plate, his heraldry the blue of the librarium. Belial is taken aback by the other Space Marine's appearance as he moved towards the Voxcatcher to warn the armory of his arrival.
A mission? I received no warning.
No, brother. I have just returned from battle. You can relax.
I think not. Did the Supreme Grand Master apprise you of my proposal?
He did. But another issue eclipses it for the moment. I bear a message that cannot be communicated across the Vox network.
Intrigued, Belial beckons for Ezekiel to enter and orders the door closed behind him. The librarian casts a glance around the sparse quarters before continuing.
Samayo and the Ravenwing have returned. The Supreme Grand Master is to convene the Inner Circle as soon as they make orbit.
And they have news? Of the old enemy?
It would appear to be the case. I have decoded certain messages within the transmission, which indicates that they have in their custody an individual of significance.
One of them alive?
The thought heartens Belial, pushing aside his dark mood. But then the importance of Ezekiel's news to his current situation becomes more clear.
The Deathwing are going to be redeployed, aren't they? Perhaps the whole chapter? That is why you have come here. That is why my proposal will not be addressed yet.
I cannot say for sure what will happen. I came to you only as a courtesy, brother. It is likely that if information is gleaned from this new captive, an expedition will be launched. The Deathwing will, you are correct, be required to spearhead such an operation in concert with the Ravenwing.
So I am to leave Pasina again before my task is completed?
That is not your decision to take. Brother Sergeant Seraphiel, one of the Knights of the Old Order, has also sent word. He has been forced to elevate three of the Battle Brothers to the status of Deathwing. You can access the full details on his engagement report.
I see. Three more brothers to welcome to the damnation of the truth. I do not envy them the next few days. We shall see if they really have the mettle to become Deathwing.
I must speak to Brother Chaplain Saffron. I will see you at the convening of the Inner Circle.
Belial bids farewell to the librarian with a nod and turns his attention to his network terminal. He spends some time reading the reports of Sergeant Seraphiel, one of the Inner Circle's lesser-ranked agents. At times, it is useful for the Inner Circle to have eyes and ears in places where those of officer rank would arouse suspicion and quieten tongues. Several more days pass. Days of fighting orcs and rebels, days of monotonous bloodshed, yet every encounter, every skirmish and battle is treated with equal importance by the Master of the First Company. He may wish the battle ended, but not the smallest detail in tactics or execution escapes his attention. None that exceed expectation go without praise, and none that fall short go without penance. Belial notices his own distraction on occasion, thinking about his entreaty to Azrael or the meaning of the returned Ravenwing. But he tries his best to conquer the unease he feels. He would expect nothing less of those under his command, and certainly expects total focus from himself. Eventually, Samael and his second company reach the Tower of Angels above Pasina, and Azrael convenes the Inner Circle. Before he can attend, Belial has another matter to address, one more duty to execute. To welcome the newest inductees of the First Company. He waits for them to arrive from their ship, an imposing figure of absolute authority as far as the Battle Brothers are concerned. Unaware, as they are, of the debates and dichotomies that cause him such anguish on occasion. His mind is filled with dark thoughts, and his mood is grim. Two of the newcomers, brothers Mentheus and Daylon, disembark swiftly from the Thunderhawk and come to attention in front of the Grand Master. Belial eyes them patiently, simultaneously disappointed by them, and yet full of empathy. He is disappointed because they have disobeyed orders and witnessed the fallen firsthand. Sergeant Seraphiel could perhaps have organized their deaths to maintain the close secrecy around knowledge of the traitors, but he has seen promise in the warriors and has chosen to spare them. Belial feels for them also because he knows what they do not, what they will learn soon. Myths and outright lies have been their diet up until now, and their next meal will be the raw truth, as unpalatable as grog stripe. He has known even the most mentally strong warriors lose their courage, their purpose and duty, when they have learned that much of what they fight to protect is a lie. The third, Telaminus, descends after another minute has passed, his gaze casually appraising Belial, as if he was at a briefing or report. Telaminus falls into place without so much as a word of apology. Such disrespect on meeting his new Grand Master for the first time has to be confronted, lest it lead to further laxity. Belial can see the latent arrogance that lingers behind their confident looks. They have been welcomed into the elite of the chapter. Why would they not be pleased with themselves? Belial keeps his thoughts from his features as Telemenus comes to attention. The Grand Master touches his fingers to his belt, a moment of self-restraint, feeling the three large keys that are symbols of his inner circle duties, until his hand finds the pummel of the famed Sword of Silence, one of the three Heavenfall blades forged from meteoric stone in the chapter's ancient past. Belial allows his displeasure to show as he glances at Telemenus.
You are tardy.
Brother Seraphiel had parting words for me, Grandmaster.
Did I ask for explanation?
Taken aback by the question, Telemenus shakes his head in reply. Belial's brow furrows deeply.
Speak when spoken to.
Telemenus considers this.
No, Grandmaster. You did not ask for explanation.
As the gunship takes off, dust and hot air wash over the First Company's newest warriors. Telemenus' eyes are locked on Belial. Seeking approval, perhaps, or fearing further condemnation, Belial shifts his gaze to Daylon, and then to Mentheus. The latter is heavily bandaged, still recovering from the wounds suffered in their latest battle. Each of them is a fine warrior, their records speak as much. Yet they have come to the Deathwing under a cloud, disobeying orders and coming face to face with the Fallen, forcing Brother Seraphiel's hand. They will learn how to fight with tactical dreadnought armor, and they will recite the litanies and rites of the First Company, but will they have the heart to do what has to be done, when the needs of the hunt and the chapter are at odds with the needs of the Imperium? It is a question that cannot be answered, not hypothetically at least. They will either be capable or not, and only the experience of being placed in such a situation will provide the truth. It is the same unknowable quality that the Inner Circle demands of its members. Loyalty does not have to be unquestioning, despite the efforts and rants of Asmodai, but first and foremost, it has to be to the Inner Circle and the Chapter. Belial has long harbored doubts about the direction the chapter is heading, and his desire to hunt down Ghazkul is fueled in no small part by a longing to engage in a straightforward, honorable act that has uncontested benefit. Too long he has been forced to tread a line between oaths to the Dark Angels and protection of the Imperium. It would be a blessing to achieve victory without any tarnish. Belial realizes he is putting Azrael in one of those difficult circumstances. The Supreme Grandmaster must have considered in private the possibility of Exterminatus, not just of Piscina, but other worlds. While it remains private speculation, the tacit agreement not to discuss such a subject has held the status quo. Belial's request has forced the issue into the open, demanding that Azrael take a view, and that in turn means that the others of the Inner Council will be forced to back or argue against the proposal. On a matter of such importance, a potential schism threatens, unwittingly instigated by Belial and encouraged by Asmodai. Whether Azrael refuses Belial's plan or accepts it, there are likely to be unforeseen consequences. The thought sours his mood even further. Belial has offered a solution, but ultimately, it is not his choice. Does that make it easier for him to suggest wiping out millions of lives, the final responsibility belonging to Azrael? If the Supreme Grand Master had asked the same question of him, would Belial be so sure in his arguments, knowing that the debate was of practical importance and not just one of principle? Does one of these warriors standing before him have the same kind of focus and attention to duty that might one day see them elevated to the highest rank of the Dark Angels? Is Belial looking at a future Supreme Grand Master? From what he sees, Belial doubts it. But there has never been a new addition to the Deathwing that did not initially disappoint him, even those that have later earned his respect and become heroes of the chapter. He stares at Mentheus.
Have the apothecaries cleared you for combat?
Mentheus starts to tremble and casts his gaze groundwards, earning a concerned glance from Telemenus.
No, Grandmaster.
If you cannot fight, you cannot train.
Belial crosses his arms, revealing the tattoos on his skin, from shoulder to elbow, lines of minuscule text. Belial notices Telemenus's interest and steps in front of him, raising and flexing his massive bicep so that the Space Marine can see more clearly what is written there. There are more on his chest that Telemenus cannot see, almost hidden against the dark subdermal layer of Belial's black carapace. They are the most important reminders, close to his heart. They are lines from the liturgies of battle and other texts, scribed with a neat, rounded script by Belial himself. Some are repeated over and over, lessons to be heeded again and again. Others, written only once, as solitary reminders of a moment's oversight or error. Belial reads in Telemenus's expression the curiosity that has brought him to the Deathwing, but the Battle Brother at least has the good sense and discipline this time to hold his tongue. Belial decides to indulge them, a morsel of information about their new master for them to savor, but also a warning if they are clever enough to heed it.
Lessons not to be forgotten.
The Grand Master turns away and starts towards the door, speaking without looking.
Brother Daylon, you will report to quarters and await further instruction. Brother Mentheus, you will report to the Apothecarion for further treatment. Brother Telemenus.
Belial turns back, his gaze as hard as flint as he looks at his newest warrior.
Brother Telemenus, you will report to the chaplains for 2 days' penance and contemplation for the disrespect you have shown me. Use the time to reflect on the necessity of making apology when you keep a superior waiting. You may also like to think on the importance of first impressions. I will be watching you closely.
The three Space Marines reply in unison, but Belial's thoughts are already moving to other more pressing matters.
Yes, Grandmaster.
He leaves. The three Battle Brothers fully expunged from his thoughts the moment he steps through the bulkhead. The inner circle awaits, and with them, Belial's and possibly Piscina's future.
The beast erupted from the hill of ferrocrete and brick, scattering debris like a detonating warhead. The orc's armor was dented and broken in many places, and blood trickled from his left leg, mixing with dark fluid that spilled from a severed hydraulic link. The warlord's gun arm hung uselessly, trapped inside the broken exo-armor, and he had a slight limp as he dragged itself out of the rubble and started towards me. Even wounded, the beast looked a daunting prospect in hand-to-hand combat. But I could see no other option as the warlord plowed through the remnants of the warehouse, bellowing challenges or threats, or perhaps both. The whole orc invasion would lose impetus if the warlord was killed. The only way to be sure would be to drive my blade through his heart, slash open his throat, or perhaps decapitate him. I did not relish the prospect of a close quarters encounter, but if I withdrew now, the beast would confront some other element of the Dark Angel's force, or the Piscinan Free Militia, meaningless deaths that could be avoided if I stood strong. And I regret to say, his dismissive attitude at the outset of the encounter still nagged at me, and I wanted Gazkul to know he had been bested by me in the moments before he died. Foolish sentiment, arrogance, that has not claimed me since. The importance of this duty lent strength to my limbs as I raised the plasma pistol and fired, shooting as the warlord slid down a rubble pile a few meters away. A shot melted a spray of cable sticking out of the already defunct gun, sending up a shower of sparks and molten metal,
but there will be no second shot before we met in hand-to-hand combat. There were no snarls or posturing, and I held my silence. I could read the simple intent to kill in the creature's eyes, and the same was in my mind. I took up my blade in both hands as the green skin broke into a charge. Power claw raised for the first blow. I kept to the roadway, secure footing beneath my boots, and at the last moment stepped to the left and brought up the Sword of Silence. My blade slashed across the beast's upraised arm, ringing from the lightning reed power claw. Energy flares as I move past, turning my wrist to send the tip of the sword whipping across the warlord's knee. Pneumatic pipes parted, but the beast was not hobbled yet. Ghazghoul's claw crashed down on my backpack, but when most needed, the archaic technologies of the displacer field failed to activate. Warnings flashed as power systems failed, the reactor reduced to emergency output only by the blow. The displacer field was just a lump of useless wires and crystals encased within my breastplate. Suddenly, encumbered by the weight of my armor, I was slow to turn. The beast was on me, punching me in the chest. The displacer field flared for a final time, to my surprise, hurling me 10 meters to the left. But I lost my footing as I reappeared on the edge of the destroyed warehouse, my compromised battle plate unable to stabilize in time. I fell to one knee, as though I was making supplication to that foul creature. I was able to straighten just in time to dodge the next swing of the power claw as the beast pressed home his attack. My sword struck the gorget, cleaving through the painted metal, but deflected from flesh and bone. The beast kicked, a hydraulically assisted blow that hit me square in the groin, sending me back a couple of meters. More warnings blared as I crashed onto my already damaged backpack. Ghazghoul loomed over me as shutdown icons blinked into view. My right arm was dead, the fiber bundles severed somewhere near the shoulder, sword gripped uselessly in my fist. The power claw burned bright against the smoke-choked sky as the beast lifted it high above his head, ready for the killing blow. I spat a curse. I do not remember the words. Childish, really, but I was bitterly disappointed and angry at the time.
By the light of the bulkhead lamp, Belial continues his work. The flesh pen buzzes in his grip, thick fingers moving with surprising grace for their size. He applies the ink just below his left pectoral, in a space he has been saving for a very special act of penance and remembrance. A maxim from the Tactica Imperialis, which he was taught a few days after being inducted in the Scout Company. He crafts each letter slowly, the vibration of the stylus, the pain of his pierced flesh, etching into his mind the lesson as much as it etches the form of the words into his skin. He takes his time, teeth gritted, thinking back to the debate of the inner circle. Azrael has offered no answer to the question of utter extermination. Belial is to be sent on some wild mission at Saffron's behest, chasing a dubious lead, tricked from the fallen, captured during Samuel's latest excursion. To make matters worse, another fallen, perhaps the most duplicitous and scheming of their kind, is to be taken on the mission as some kind of secret weapon. It seems like folly, and Belial has spoken against the plan, as has Asmodai. Belial pauses in his work for a moment, wondering if there is any significance to the fact that he seems to be agreeing more and more with a hard-line chaplain in recent years. Is Asmodai's fanaticism to be Belial's fate, or is it simply a matter of necessity to find a like-minded ally at present? The question brings a rare, wry smile to his lips as he ponders this and the nature of the tenet he is applying to his flesh. He resumes the tattooing, the smile quickly replaced by a grimace. For a normal man, The pain of such decoration would be expected, but to one with a body of a space marine, the pain would not only be negligible, it would be beneath notice. But there can be no penance without punishment, as Azrael correctly asserted, and so the ink that Belial uses to carve the lesson into his skin contains an acidic compound that gnaws at his flesh, making every stroke and flourish a localized agony. The lesson does not end in moments, nor in minutes. The scars of the tattoo bear with them the remnant of that pain, so that the soreness is a reminder of the mistakes Belial has made to be endured until his death. Too many mistakes, too many miscalculations, too many dead that need not have died, too many escaping death that should have been slain. But for all the sins, intentional and unintentional, committed, the pain is not yet too much for him to bear.
My armor registered an odd increase in air pressure. A moment later, exploding bolts flared across the body of the beast, hundreds of rapid detonations. I turned my head and saw five space marines in Terminator armor bearing down on Garth's Kul, their storm bolters as relentless as their advance. Two of the Terminators broke from the squad, power fists gleaming as they charged the Orc Warlord, bodily smashing into the beast to bear it away from my prone position. The remaining three Deathwing veterans formed up around the Task Force commander, weapons at the ready. I recognized the heraldry of Sergeant Calderane. The first company squad leader looked down at me. The lenses of his helm reflected the flash and flare of the beast's power claw, tearing into the other Terminators. I will never forget their sacrifice. Nor will I forget Sergeant Calderane's next words.
Bacon was on target. Company master is secured. Activate teleport.
And then Cadillus Harbor disappeared. I was alive. But so was the beast. A shame I bear to this day.
Not this time, vengeance against the orcs. The hunt for the fallen takes precedence. Belial understands this, even though it is inconvenient. He does not think Azrael will call for exterminatus, and the fighting on Piscina will be protracted. The reports of the beast will be filed, and then the reports will stop, and the victims of the monster's rampage will be buried, and Ghaz Kul will move on and elude justice for another decade. But Belial takes comfort from the advice he now inks into his flesh to remain vexing until the day of his death. Today's lesson is not one of condemnation, but one of hope. It is even truer now than it was a few days before, when he had sought retribution against the beast and its kind. Another foe demands justice, a foe far older than the beast, and even more deserving of hate. The hunt continues, and the fallen will be rooted out from the darkness and brought into the light of examination. There is no higher cause, and for all the mental torment it causes Belial on occasion, when more pressing temporal matters occupy his thoughts, he knows in the deepest part of his heart that there is no more important calling than to expunge the ancient stain upon the honor of the Dark Angels. He applies the last stroke of the flesh pen, pulling in a sharp breath as he finishes. Setting aside the instrument, he stands up and raises his arms, stretching the skin of his torso, taking an odd pride in the flare of pain across his epidermis. The pain subsides to a dull ache that will last for decades, enough to serve as a reminder. He reads the message he has written to himself again, nodding in thanks for the wisdom he learnt so long ago in the 10th Company. He speaks the teaching out loud, making an oath out of the words, sworn to the harshest master he knew, himself.
Do not win the battle, win the war. Victory is counted not in days, but generations.
Yeah. Trials of Azrael, a Space Marine Battles audio drama by C.Z. Dunn. Performed by Sean Barrett, Tim Bentinck, Claire Corbett, Chris Fairbank, and Luke Thompson. Directed by Samuel Gunn. Produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library. In a lifetime that had already spanned more than 10,000 years, Ezekiel Abaddon had made precious few mistakes. Some argue that he should have carried part of the blame for the death of Horus, but ultimately it was the former War Master's overreaching ambition that led to his demise, rather than the actions or inaction of any of his lieutenants. Others claim that the 12 failed Black Crusades to his name were all mistakes, though the countless Imperial worlds made ruin and the millions of souls butchered or enslaved tell a very different story. The invasion of the Pandarax system and the opening of the Damnation Cache should have left no doubt of Abaddon's martial prowess in the minds of those who followed. An entire system in the heart of Imperial space made the realm of demons a gateway from which a full-scale invasion of reality could be launched by the dwellers within the warp. Though in years to come, scholars would debate endlessly the wisdom of such an audacious act, and why Abaddon himself had chosen to lead the ground assault on Pythos before the Void War was concluded, one question above all other remained unanswered. With tens of thousands of sorcerers, shamans, and seers under his command, how was the arrival of the entire Dark Angels chapter, along with a full brotherhood of Grey Knights, not foreseen?
Gabriel, how goes the day?
Well, Lord Azrael, the enemy forces are routing and most of the covens have been put to the blade.
Around them, ivory-armored figures cut merciless swathes through robed figures, or vaporized warp fiends with unerring blasts from storm bolters and assault cannons. The Dark Angel's intervention had been a timely one. Augmented by elements of Huron Blackheart's Red Corsairs, Abaddon's fleet had come perilously close to destroying the two Imperial flagships, Revenge and Stalwart, while the rest of the Imperial Armada was scattered or drifting at the mercy of Chaos guns. The turning point came when the Red Corsair's vessel, Might of Huron, smashed a tethered asteroid into the aft sections of Revenge, opening the ship to the void and allowing the cultists on board to summon demons directly aboard the stricken ship. Even now, with the entirety of the Dark Angels' first company deployed inside the hollowed-out asteroid, the rest of the chapter, along with Supreme Grandmaster Drago and a Brotherhood of Grey Knights, battle the demonic hordes on board Revenge. The vox link in Azrael's winged helm crackled to life.
Master Azrael, is the asteroid secure?
There was no love lost between the Supreme Grand Masters of the Dark Angels and Grey Knights chapters, and when Drago had approached Azrael for aid on this mission, it was only begrudgingly granted in light of the grave threat to the wider Imperium.
Aye. My brothers and I have put pay to the sorceress cabals, Lord Drago. Though, from the sound of things, you require assistance on board Revenge.
There was a pause, as if the Grey Knight were carefully considering his response.
The Brotherhood would be grateful for any reinforcements.
A cultist, bleeding from the eyes and frothing at the lips, emerged from a throng of robed figures and charged the two Space Marines, blade aloft. Gabriel swatted the man with a swing of an armored arm, sending him flailing into the path of Azrael, who cleaved him in twain at the sternum with a flick of his sword.
I will personally lead a force across. Activate a beacon, and we will teleport to your position.
Activated. I look forward to fighting along.
Azrael cut the vox link, disinterested in the Grey Knight's platitudes.
Gabriel, I will take half of the Deathwing over to the Revenge with me. Cleanse this den of filth and witchery. Then follow me across.
Understood. Squads Isakar, Jorail, Felrion, Zarius, and Castius form up on the Supreme Grandmaster and prepare to teleport aboard the Revenge. The rest of you, leave no soul alive on board this abomination unless it wears the ivory of the Deathwing.
Azrael and Gabriel raised their twin blades in salute, the dark metal ringing out as they connected. 50 Terminator armored giants broke off from combat and gathered in a circle around the green armored figure of Azrael, short blasts of bolter fire mopping up survivors as they went.
We have made short work of the enemy's sorcerers, Deathwing. Yet, the true test still awaits us. The incantations uttered here opened gateways into the very warp itself, and demons run amok on board the Revenge.
The air surrounding the Dark Angels began to glow unnaturally, and the scent of sulfur that pervaded in the vast asteroid caverns gave way to a crisp ozone smell.
Lord Drago himself has requested the Deathwing's aid, and so...
The upper half of the cultist Azrael thought he had just slain began to drag itself forwards, a bloody smear trailing in its wake. Gabriel swung his sword, thrusting the tip through the top of the man's skull, but not before he'd been able to utter a few vile syllables.
Let us show the Grey Knights how the Dark Angels wage war.
For the briefest of moments, the Supreme Grand Master of the Dark Angels was disoriented. He had expected to materialize alongside his Deathwing brothers in the heart of the conflict, but instead found himself in a darkened chamber. Something had gone wrong with the teleportation. He instantly became aware that he was not alone. Slowly, he drew the Sword of Secrets from the scabbard at his side and pointed it firmly at the vague outline of a power-armored figure on the opposite side of the chamber.
Who is there? Show yourself!
The figure separated itself from the shadows, the spikes adorning its armor and the decorative arch crowning its helmet, resolving out of the gloom.
Hello, Dark Angel.
The figure continued onwards. Azrael could now make out that the arch above the figure's helmet was incomplete, the two curved pieces of metal like some twisted parody of his own winged helm. He could also tell that the armor was red, blood red.
Let me show you how Khan makes war.
It was the taste of blood in her mouth that told junior tech adept Enclamita Chena she was still alive. Though when she realized it wasn't her own blood, she almost wished the opposite were true. Giddily, she rose to her feet and surveyed what was left of the secondary sensorium chamber. Most obvious were the corpses, dozens of them scattered like abandoned children's toys, including the remains of her master,